Welcome to episode 259 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There will be links with more information available on the show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. Today is about the nucleus.
Okay.
I want to get that out front because we're about to babble for a while, and sometimes we forget to even say the subject of the show.
What are they talking about?
But we've been watching prokaryotes turn into eukaryotes. Mm-hmm. And having a cellular nucleus is a defining characteristic.
He's mad. He's spitting, folks. Run for your life.
Right. So, you know, if you're a prokaryote, you're smaller than a eukaryote.
Oh, okay.
And you don't have no nucleus.
No.
You do have some organelles, though. I accidentally implied that organelles have to be inside a membrane of their own to be an organelle. That's not true.
Oh, okay.
Take ribosomes.
Okay.
Which is Greek for something like little dot or something.
It's kind of what they look like. Sounds good.
Those are organelles.
Oh.
Their mission in life is to take RNA, specifically messenger RNA.
Yeah, yeah.
And translate that into how to build a protein.
Perfect.
Of a particular composition and so forth. Mm. Those are organelles, no membrane for them. And now we finally have to talk about cell membranes.
Okay.
Right. So, at least for animals, cellular membrane is a bilipid barrier.
So kind two lipids, bilipid.
Okay. Bilipid barrier. It's kind of a double membrane is what it is.
Oh.
These lipids have sort of a head and tail.
Okay.
And the head is kind of big and mushy.
Yeah, okay.
And it loves water.
I'm like me, except for the water thing. It's raining right now. I don't want to go outside.
Oh, you poor thing. The tail is afraid of water. Doesn't want to get anywhere near it. What happens is you get the heads pointing out, and then in between those two layers of heads, you have tails.
Pointing in.
Pointing in.
Okay.
Right, so you got the water-loving heads, and then some tails, and then some more water-loving heads.
Okay.
Double layer. There you go. There's your sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very confusing because sometimes they refer to that as two membranes. Sometimes they call that one membrane.
Okay.
And when we're talking about things like mitochondria that have a double membrane, they're talking a bilipid barrier here.
Okay.
It took me forever to finally nail that down. Okay. That's an interesting thing. Some of the chloroplasts, right? Plants use them to photosynthesize, amongst other things.
Okay.
Some of them have three or four.
Oh, goodness.
Layers of membrane. They figure that once upon a time ago, somebody ate, we got a Russian doll thing going on. Somebody ate a cyanobacteria, and then somebody ate that.
Okay.
But the cellular nucleus in eukaryotes, which is the only place it exists, it has a bilipid membrane.
Bilipid membrane.
Yes, okay. They call it the outer and inner nuclear membranes.
Okay, cool.
Through it are nuclear pores. A lot of these names have nuclear in front of them.
Scary. Radioactive.
Anyway, these the pores are important because this is a picky barrier.
Okay.
There are the water can get across fairly easily. There are some ions.
Ions, right? It's like an island of ions.
I was going to be able to edit it out, but now you made it funny. But any bigger molecules, biomolecules, DNA, RNA, proteins, and the like have to be brought through on purpose.
Okay.
Almost all of those get transported actively.
Ah.
As opposed to just drifting through.
So, yeah, it's picky, as you say.
Yes. Inside the nucleus, it's not all just mush.
Okay.
There are some distinct regions that do distinct jobs.
Oh.
And there's more than that I'm going to list. In fact, I'm only going to list the biggest one.
Okay.
The nucleolus.
Ah.
Which sounds like a joke. Sounds like somebody saying nucleus in pseudo-Spanish. You know? That thing builds ribosomes.
Mm.
It translates bits of DNA into RNA that will never become a protein because it's busy building proteins.
RNA
is. So the ribosomes get built constantly throughout a cell's lifetime.
Okay.
They also wear out and get scavenged and taken apart. a turnover thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They start inside the nucleolus,
mm-hmm.
and then they travel up into the rough reticulum.
Okay.
The outer membrane of the nucleus
okay.
is contiguous
yeah.
or continuous
mm-hmm.
or just sort of melts into the membrane of the rough reticulum.
Oh. Oh. Okay. This is stuck together.
Yeah. And what that does is provide an uninterrupted channel
okay.
for the ribosomes and for the messenger RNA.
Hey,
so okay. they don't get lost.
This is where we need you. That way.
Mind yeah. you, not all ribosomes stay on the rough reticulum. Some of them just float around in the cytoplasm.
Just for fun. You know,
and I like it here.
You want me to do something, you're going to have to find me.
Also inside your nucleus
uh-huh.
are translation factories.
Okay.
And what are they translating? Well, they are building the messenger RNA that will go up and meet a ribosome and make a protein later.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing that by reading chunks of DNA.
Hey, okay.
There's a certain amount of information in DNA. We talked about that on Monday. Welcome to the intro we don't do on Mondays, huh, Brad?
You don't get to know my name.
It's a mystery. This is our new record time.
Okay, yeah.
Noon instead of 7 p.m. It was either this or 1 in the morning, so. It's
starting to lean towards 1 in the morning.
Yeah, especially if that meant I could, yeah, well, mm-hmm.
Mm, okay.
So I'm going to try and take you down this rabbit hole with me.
Okay, rabbit hole, okay.
Yeah, last week I got distracted and ended up doing some research for this week. I didn't mean to. I got distracted. Did I mention?
Okay,
I saw this bird on the porch the other day. No,
Speaking of distracted. Okay. Well, what are
right,
we talking
okay.
about?
Okay, we are talking about looking at the Dorg,
mm-hmm.
right? These are my digital organisms, which I try and do experiments and evolve towards acting intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Long ago, I gave up on just breeding them for intelligence.
Okay.
For reasons.
Mm.
And decided I should somehow harness the power of self-organization.
Yeah.
What is self-organization? That means a whole bunch of individual agents all somehow cooperate without anybody being in charge to build something together.
Okay.
Like ants and their colonies, bees in the hive, termites and their amazing mounds, or single cells and your body.
Okay. Voila. Nobody's in charge?
Nobody's in charge. Nobody has an actual blueprint. And there's been research done on this, and what they found is that the individual agents follow fairly simple rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, at least for the case of multicellular critters, they get into where they're going to live, and then they change to a different rule set.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it all goes back and forth like that. But to give you an idea of what I mean, like our cells building something more complicated than they are.
Okay.
Our DNA has 3 billion base pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And, base 4 rather than binary, which
okay.
means if you want to talk about the number of bits, you double it and you've got 6 billion.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. You were with me. We've done this before.
Yeah.
And then what was it? 0.75
gigabytes,
billion yeah. bytes. It was 750 megabytes.
Okay.
Which is a small amount of data, really.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not even a movie.
Yeah, and that's not what I've been sold as far as, like, it was always terabytes, like the information in our body.
Yeah, yeah. But you've got 16 billion neurons in your forebrain alone.
Ooh.
Even if you could somehow manageably designate one neuron per bit, which you can't, you don't have enough information in your DNA to mark out how your neurons are going to land.
Hmm, okay.
So they have to be this sort of self-organization thing going on.
So, yeah, they just kind of weasel their way someplace. And then
weasel their way, exactly.
Wherever they all
they
turn land.
Into weasels.
How to make a baby. Weasels.
Oh.
Okay, wait a minute.
So anyway, that means I got to make them act a little bit multicellular. And from various critters I've been looking at, it looks like if you want to act multicellular, your cells should have the ability to change from one form to another.
Oh, okay.
37 trillion cells, according to one factoid, are in our body.
Mm-hmm.
and about 200 cell types, according to another factoid. Okay. I haven't really dug into these numbers at all.
We just for rough outlines here. Yeah, okay.
So I was trying to figure out how I could make the Dorg change body types, or at least change behavior, depending on, you know, get different rule sets depending upon where they are. And I thought I'd take the DNA and break it up into chunks.
Yeah.
And I thought at the time, this is not a realistic model, because in my head, DNA has always been one long chain.
Yeah.
Except it's not.
This is the rabbit hole.
All right. I've been wrong all this time. Every chromosome has its own individual DNA molecule.
Yeah.
It took a long time just to find an article that said that in an unambiguous sentence. It was amazing. They kept saying it in a way that could be interpreted either way.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got to this one that was talking about the length of DNA. Like, if you unravel all 46 chromosomes and put their strands side by side, it would be 6 feet long.
Okay.
Right. Well, you don't put strands side by side if they're already connected. You don't have to.
We were talking about this. I totally agreed. I thought, yes, absolutely. One strand. And then I remembered all the pictures of chromosomes in their base pair form and how they just sit there all by themselves. And that's not the whole set of information that DNA is. So it's been staring me in the face.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've been reading things that would tell me otherwise all my life. Mm-hmm. And it never quite sank in.
Yeah.
It's otherwise. So that's why it was kind of a rabbit hole, right? I always thought different. I was thinking, this is unrealistic. And then I started, well, no, that's how nature does it. I was just going to do another take here.
That occurred to me. And it made me laugh. I'm sorry.
Other takes are funny.
See? We're going to get this.
What have you done to me? Okay. So when we're looking at the Dorg, right? Digital organism.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about having the equivalent of chromosomes.
Yeah.
Which, what I mean by that is like different strings of numbers that would act as a program. And I was originally thinking, hey, one string when it's a juvenile, another string when it's an adult, la-da-da-da-da.
Okay, yeah.
And then I was thinking, hey, nature isn't necessarily that...
selective?
Organized.
Organized, okay.
It's not the way evolution would design something.
Right,
you can tell because we got like 200 cell types.
Yeah.
And only 46 chromosomes, so... But I can put little ports in there and let them hash that out by themselves.
Right.
In the meantime, when we were talking about it having 6 billion bits...
Uh-huh.
750 megabytes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely an optimistic estimation of how much data you can hold in DNA. They have used various methods to encode information into DNA. You hear of like music groups putting out their album in a vial and things like that.
Wild.
Mm-hmm. What they have found is that you can't use all four bases.
Really?
To do a base four encoding because you end up you end up with a bunch of zeros in a row.
Now,
whatever you chose for nuclear base is going to be a bunch of those in a row. That causes structural problems.
Oh.
It can weaken the molecule.
Mm-hmm.
It can also make itself sticky.
It's okay.
That's a technical term that I really love. Self-sticky. Meaning if it crosses by that, it's going to stick to itself. It's going to become an entangled mess, impossible to read. DNA has all sorts of mechanical constraints for holding the information that the Dorg do not.
Yeah. Digital. I can do zeros and ones at my leisure.
Indeed. There are all sorts of areas in the DNA that don't encode for anything.
They're just holding it together?
RNA comes in there, and they're well conserved from basal ancestors all the way to us.
Mm-hmm.
They think that it's structural.
Yeah, okay.
That these particular sequences are good for the DNA strength and flexibility.
So they're just, I like that. Okay. That makes sense why there's wasted DNA, or they suggest.
Yeah, indeed. Another thing you have are caps on the end, also made of DNA. They're called telomeres.
Telomeres. Ooh. I don't know why. I like that.
It's to help protect it while it's dividing and being copied. Certain shoelaces have those hard round bits on the end.
Yeah.
Which are called aglets. Why do I know that? That's right.
Trivia question or something.
So it's like that. It helps keep it from unraveling.
Telomere more. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, thank you. Stop it.
It'll lift right out.
You also got a thing called a centromere.
Okay.
To explain what that is and what it does, I have to sort of explain how DNA gets packed.
Okay.
How much DNA is in your nucleus?
Lots.
Good question. I hear most people say if you stretch it all out and lay all the strands from the different chromosomes end to end, you'd get about 6 feet.
From a molecular...
That's
pretty long.
It's enormous compared to the size of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
One guy and one guy only said there was about a meter and a half in every chromosome.
Okay.
With 46 chromosomes, a meter and a half is just over 5 feet. That's over 200 feet of DNA, more than 60 meters. I don't believe him.
Bigger. There's a trend I'm seeing.
But I mean, even 6 feet for molecules, right? On the scale they're working on, the machinery that has to read it and pack it and so forth, it's enormous.
Yeah, I wish we had enough math. We could be like, you get your little messenger RNA that has to travel the equivalent from here to North Dakota. Something like that.
Well,
but why do the math when you can make it up?
Don't tell me. So to pack all this in, stuff happens. First off, we have histones.
Okay.
These are little spindle-like proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And DNA winds around that.
Cool.
And then you get 8 of those together.
Okay.
And they all form into what they call a nucleosome.
Nucleosome.
Nucleosome. It's spelled funny. And you end up with a DNA chain that looks like a string of beads.
Oh, pretty, I guess.
Yes, right. Now, you can take those nucleosomes.
Okay.
And wind them up into what they call a solenoid.
Okay.
Now you take that chain of solenoids and coil it up into what they call the super coil.
Bigger.
Okay. Now you take the super coil.
Oh, yes. All right.
And you wind that up into what they call the chromatome fiber.
Okay.
Chromatome. They talk about it like a substance. It's really a sort of network of proteins, DNA, and a little dash of RNA in there.
Okay.
All mixed together. We're still not done. This fiber
goes
at least 2 more levels of twisting around.
Does either name have a mega in there?
Mega super ultra fire. And that forms your chromosome.
Okay.
Not necessarily in the middle of it, but towards the middle of it is a section where it attaches to it's a homologous partner.
Okay.
Yeah, there's 2 of every chromosome.
Oh, right.
One from the mom, one from the dad. They attach at the centromere.
Ah, that thing. Okay.
The centromere. I keep putting a V sound in there.
Sounds better.
Also,
they named it wrong.
After, once you've got 2 of those, during this whole cell division thing, some microtubule grows out from either side, grabs it by the centrovere, and hauls it over out of the way of the mesh of the machinery so that you get 1 set of chromosomes for each daughter cell.
Okay.
That little bit right there, it has its own extra proteins to make all of that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a number of those repeating sequences around it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because of some mechanical stress getting hauled around by the centromere.
I know. He's got me by the centromere.
Now, when it's all wound up like this, right, it only happens when cell division is on the way. And that's the only time it's visible under a microscope.
Okay.
A chromosome. To translate it or replicate it, it has to get unwound.
Okay.
What does it look like when it's unwound? I don't know. We can't see it when it's unwound.
I hear it's about 6 feet long.
But what they have found, there was a couple of theories about it. One was that they just unwind and mix together like a plate of spaghetti.
Okay.
Another was that each one would have its own discrete territory.
Interesting.
Turns out to be the territory one.
Oh.
Which is good, because the spaghetti one doesn't make any sense. All the effort they're trying to do to keep from getting tangled up and useless.
Yeah, let's tangle them up. Okay.
How would you untangle them to pack them back up? Anyway.
Well, spaghetti, it's tasty. I don't know.
Interesting side things to the territories for the chromosomes. They're not always in exactly the same place. Mm-hmm. Even within the same tissue and the same organ and the same cell types. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the chromosomes are in slightly different places. But there is a tendency, sort of a statistical tendency, for a particular type of tissue mm-hmm. with its particular type of cell to have about the same arrangement of chromosomes.
Huh. Okay. How free-floating are they?
I mean, it seems like once they're in place to do their job, mm-hmm. they ain't moving. There's no free-floating at all. They're moved around by shepherd molecules.
Nice! That's what you call those. Yes, okay.
More constraints, right? Say you have a gene that encodes for a particular protein.
Okay.
Right? You are bound to have a couple of other genes that will either make it work faster
mm-hmm.
or slow it down. Oh, okay. Possibly even block it entirely.
Interesting.
Those other genes that modify the first one,
yeah,
they usually make an enzyme that then goes down and hangs out by the gene they're modifying.
Okay.
But to hang out by that gene, they attach to the DNA itself.
Okay.
On a little anchor point.
Hmm.
Again, this does not encode for RNA. It does not make RNA, or let alone proteins.
It's just hanging out.
It just is an anchor point for the enzyme that's going to modify the action of the downstream gene here.
Okay.
All sorts of things I don't have to worry about with the DORG.
Yeah.
Suggesting that the amount of actual active data to do the equivalent of a human cells
mm-hmm.
differentiating into neurons, it might be trivial.
Huh?
4-1 DORG.
No structural problems, no worrying about anchor points.
This is where it all comes crashing down, right?
Oh.
Because several billion times trivial is too much. When you look at the whole system and every single DORG, or in our case, every single neuron mm-hmm. has to have its copy of all this crap.
Oh. Okay, yeah.
But speaking of which, how am I going to get the DORG to act like a multicellular critter? And while we're hovering around the subject, how do multicellular critters start acting like multicellular critters?
Oh, these seem like really hard questions.
Yeah, that's why we're going to talk about those
Aha!
next time. See you then.
Bye.